From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later on, seances. Here's what's happening. Well, it could be bagged salad causing that parasite outbreak we've been talking about for a couple of days. Health officials in Iowa and Nebraska tagged prepackaged salad mix as the source of an outbreak of parasitic-borne food poisoning in those states, even though federal officials are still working to find out where else it may have happened. Iowa's top food inspector said the bagged salad was behind the outbreak that has sickened 143 people in that state and 78 in Nebraska. Overall, 373 people in 15 states have been sickened by the rare parasite. That's since June. A New York appeals court has upheld a ruling striking down New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's latest health push, his controversial ban on large sugary drinks. The ban, which have prohibited the sale of sodas and other sugary beverages larger than 16 ounces by restaurants and city eateries, was an illegal overreach of executive power. Well, the driver of that train that derailed in northwestern Spain last week, killing 79 people, was on the phone with railway staff when the train crashed. The train was going 95 miles an hour when it derailed. That's nearly twice the speed around the curve where the accident happened. Going gone in Detroit. They're trying to sell houses for $1. And they still don't have buyers. That's how bad that city is decaying. And the U.S. home ownership rate, which soared to a record 69.2% in 2004, is back where it was two decades ago, slipping home ownership at the lowest level in 18 years. Let's check in with Catherine Austin Fitz. Why is it so bad, Catherine?
Well, actually, George, we're back to where we were in 1995 before the bubble started. So if you look, you know, we averaged 65% for the 30 years before. And, you know, worldwide, there's a very wide range. China and Russia, do you know what the average home ownership rate is in China and Russia?
That's got to be what?
85%.
That's
significantly
higher.
Yeah,
much higher.
Significantly higher. You know, maybe we should move to a communist country.
No, I'm not going.
I would tell you, I think the biggest damper on the home ownership rate right now is young people are not buying. First of all, they're loaded up with student loans, and you know they're watching the performance of the investment over the last, you know, during the pump and dump of that market, and they're also struggling with jobs and income. So the groups that are normally coming up and buying and pushing everybody up are not. They're stalled, and I think, you know, until we get the average household income, particularly in the younger groups, rising, home ownership rates are going to struggle.
Catherine, back to Detroit for a moment. Do you think it's wise to, you know, get $1,000 and go buy 1,000 homes out there?
Well, I think it will be there. I think Detroit is going to be an incredible opportunity. But as they say in my world, you need to confirm the bottom first. So there's some legal issues to be battled out. But, you know, now it's not about, I was up there looking myself last year. So I think there's going to be incredible opportunity in Detroit. I think it's just a little bit early. It's not too early to, you know, to figure it all out. But just remember, when you buy something there, you know, a house comes with lots of liabilities.
Yes,
so
sure
just
does.
Beware and take your time and be smart about it.
What if you just buy it, level it, and keep the land?
That's a good idea. Now, you know, it can be, I did that. Here in Tennessee, I leveled a house, so it can be pretty expensive to level a house. So,
yeah.
You know, but do I think buyers are going to go in there, level, and accumulate land, and that's going to be a good investment? Yes, absolutely.
Right. Catherine's website, Solari, SOLARI.com. Thanks, Catherine. The U.S. Army private who leaked thousands of classified documents has been convicted of espionage charges, but not aiding the enemy. Bradley Manning's his name, 25 years old. Convicted of 20 charges in total, including theft and computer fraud. He had admitted leaking the documents to the organization WikiLeaks, but said he did so to spark a debate on U.S. foreign policy. And in Saudi Arabia, the editor there of a Saudi Arabian social website has been sentenced to 7 years in prison, 600 lashes, for finding an internet forum that violates Islamic values and propagates liberal thought. In a moment, we'll be checking in with Robert Pelton about all these strange stories. Eileen Brennan, who earned an Oscar nomination for her hilarious part as the drill captain in 1980's Private Benjamin, has died. She was 80. She starred in Private Benjamin with Goldie Hawn. Brennan died at her Burbank, California home after a battle with bladder cancer. Lightning strikes in the United States are almost six times more likely to kill a man than a woman, according to recent released data from the Federal Centers for Disease Control. The CDC did not explain why males are so much more likely than females to be killed by lightning. The CDC looked at deaths by lightning in 43 years, and that's where they came up with those statistics. Well, one fella who almost died was hit by lightning twice, Danyon Brinkley. Well, you fall into those numbers, Danyon.
I certainly do, George, and I'm very thankful that I'm in one of those survival ratios. You know, I was struck by lightning talking on the telephone, and people don't realize, you think the phone is safe, but it's not safe. And what happens is the grounding of a lightning, there are three types of lightning, George, and the grounding lines only protects you against one. But when you look at those statistics, it's very easy to figure out. In 1942, 432 people were killed because men think they're immortal. So they think they're immune from lightning. And because of the education, think of this, 82% of all lightning deaths are men, and over half of those are sports events. But what's happened is guys quit being macho.
Yeah.
Women, excuse me, women listen to their mothers. They don't talk on the telephone. They don't stand and take a bath. They don't stand near an open window, near anything that would attract electrical. Men play golf. They don't care. They think they're immune. But what is so good about this year? It's so much less. We're becoming more educated and more caring about Mother Nature. And, George, when you realize that worldwide ground to air to ground strikes are roughly 25 million times in the world today.
Jeez.
And what most people, when they see that flash of lightning, it's not coming down, it's going up. And it's too late at that point. So I'm really glad that they put these statistics out. They didn't look at that most of half of them are sports related, and the others are related to camping, like these kids in the last couple of weeks that were killed on camping trips. The fact that someplace in I think it was Romania, that it struck a metal building and killed 8 or 9 people, and the largest death has been about 28 people.
Jeez, now when you got hit by lightning one of the two times, I mean, what did it feel like?
It's like drinking battery acid. Remember, when that lightning came down the phone line and went into the side of my head and went down my spine, it welded the nails of the heels of my shoes to the floor. And, George, if I had not had on Bass Weegans that the nails are tacked on, the heels are tacked on, sitting over nails in the floor, I would have exploded.
Oh.
It melted the telephone. It threw me in the air and threw me back down. And then 3 years later, in another house in another place, I was struck by lightning again talking on the telephone, so I highly recommend that you don't be around electrical devices and you do not talk on the telephone.
Well, let me get you off the phone now, Danyon. We'll see you later. Danyon's going to be with us, by the way, for a complete program on Veterans Day in several months. It's coming up fast, isn't it? In a moment, Robert Young Pelton joins us. We're going to be talking about his work, License to Kill, the NSA, the coming wars in Northern Africa, and how all of this affects us right here. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. I've got many favorite guests here on the program. One, Robert Young Pelton, of course, has become the inspiration role model for a new generation of intellectual adventurers. He's an author, journalist, filmmaker, photographer, adventurer, explorer, you name it. And he has trained Navy SEALs in survival as well. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing great, George.
Good. So let's get into Bradley Manning for a moment, guilty of espionage in the WikiLeaks case. I think that's probably fair. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a person who is serving in the military who is entrusted to guard information who made a personal decision to release a large number of unprotected State Department and classified communications, which then had to be redacted or at least censored by the news media in conjunction with WikiLeaks. And I have to say that even though I find that to be a clear example of illegality, the thing I found fascinating about reading all those cables is how mundane classified information is.
That's true. And do you see a difference, Robert, between then the military man, Bradley Manning, who released information, and then the Edward Snowden, who, of course, was a private person, but worked for a company and did have to go through the top secret clearance?
Yeah, there is a huge, huge difference. Well, first of all, Bradley Manning was a soldier.
That's right.
Soldier is controlled by very specific laws and requirements. Snowden was a civilian, worked for a civilian contractor, and was in charge of moving a significant amount of data on behalf of the CIA. But the fact that he was working for a private corporation should give you pause. The other thing is the information that Snowden was trying to tell us was not information that diplomats spoke to each other in private. It was a policy that our government had, which was breaking the law.
That's right.
And I think there are protections for whistleblowers, and it's questionable whether Snowden's material does show that there's illegality, whereas Bradley Manning was just simply breaking the law.
Yet in the military, and you and I both have experience there, if somebody is ordered to do what they believe to be an unlawful act, they do have the right to say no, don't they?
Yeah, but Bradley Manning was a clerk. He was shoveling information from one computer to another, as was Snowden. I mean, these are the weak links in the chain. These aren't James Bond suddenly coming clean and confessing. These are very, very low-level people with clearances who are just shoveling information via computers, and they want to get attention. And one of the key things between both Manning and Snowden is that we always link their names, and sometimes the names are more important than the information they've
released. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Manning could get, he's going to be sentenced tomorrow, up to 136 years for these convicted charges. That seems a lot, doesn't it?
It's the military. He's lucky he's not being shot. I mean,
they would in the old days.
Yeah, people have rights until you sign them away. And then when you join the military, you have obligations that a normal citizen doesn't. So, you know, he knows the penalty. He knew what was going to happen, and he's going to get that penalty.
Robert Young Pelton with us for a couple hours tonight. Robert, give me your overall perspective on just how you think things are going worldwide. What's happening?
Well, I think we as a group, and obviously that's very general, are starting to realize that the government is a separate animal, that there are things happening inside Washington, D.C., behind our backs that are going on that we haven't been asked if we would like this to happen. And I saw the biggest change in our personal freedoms essentially when the Patriot Act was passed. You know, we were all upset about the threat of terrorism. We realized that our law enforcement was handcuffed, and we agreed that we would liberalize the access to our data, but also assuming that they were going after bad guys, and specifically foreign bad guys. And then after a period of time, that liberty or that freedom of law enforcement expanded so much that instead of looking for the needle in the haystack, they're just gathering all the hay. So it's now reversed itself, and we are now under scrutiny for potential crimes, or thought crime, if you were to use an Orwellian term, without any evidence of us being bad people. And I think that's a very, very frightening thing. And one thing that people always forget is they say, well, that's all inside this big secret mechanism. You know, I remind people again that Snowden was a private contractor working for a private company. And that means that all that data is not sitting in some vault in the Pentagon. It's out there.
It is out there.
If you link in the IRS sort of pogrom against the Tea Party, or if you look at what's happening in Gitmo, where people are sitting there without trials, all the bits and pieces are in place for an Orwellian society.
Robert, I wanted to ask you a question, too, about Russia, about Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's doing some very strange public relations things. Like, you know, here he is with this fish, which people think he didn't catch, and you know, bare-shirted, and he's walking around doing his thing. Yet, people in Russia, I mean, is he liked or not there?
Well, he's liked and respected, but what he's doing is trying to portray the opposite of what Russia is. You know, if you remember back at the breakup of the Soviet Union, it basically fell apart. It was weak. It was the Russian male is considered to be weak, you know.
And a drunk, right?
Yeah, chain-smoking alcoholic who can't keep a job, et cetera, et cetera. So what Putin did is adopt the tough guy role, you know, the big father figure, the very 30s sort of Stalin type. And he plays it to the hilt, but he's trying to project the fact that Russia now has power, you know, and most of their power comes from oil revenue. You know, they can cut off oil to Europe. They can take over large chunks of the Arctic. They have a very large military, but it's to hide the actual weakness of the country.
Well, and he's doing a good job doing that.
Well, he's one of my favorite guys to make fun of, because if you can think of a cheesy photo op, he'll outdo himself, you know, within a week or so. So, you know, riding a bear shirtless or catching a bleeding fish, or what we like to say, that Putin caught a fish, but it died mysteriously in jail a week later.
They don't seem to be flexing their Russian muscles like they used to in terms of trying to stop us from doing things.
Well, yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that we've butted heads in Syria, you know, where they're providing billions of dollars worth of weapons to the Assad regime. We've butted heads in the Arctic, which they basically laid claim to large swaths of the Arctic because the ice is melting and they want to control that.
Yeah.
We've butted heads in other regions, but they've always backed down. And Putin, particularly with Snowden, he didn't ask to shelter Snowden, but you know, he's playing it very softly with the U.S. So he doesn't need us, because he's also got China and he's also got other nations beating on him. But, you know, Russia always plays the wild cards. You know, he's always backing the wacky dictators with weapons. So he doesn't push it too far, because he can have an embargo slapped on him and he can lose a lot of his exports.
There's talk that the new Iranian president is going to be a little softer on the West. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, but they're already so strapped with sanctions. The only thing that keeps them going is that they have a lot of oil to sell, and they do make a lot of hard currency. And we don't talk too toughly about them, but right now Iran's fighting inside Syria and actually winning the war against the rebels. They poured in Hezbollah reinforcements, and there's a lot of weird dynamics that weren't there 6 months ago. You actually have Iran fighting a proxy war inside Syria with Russia, helping to defeat the people that we're supposed to support.
There, I have a guest on last night. He's a trend expert, and he thinks that some kind of big war is coming. What do you think?
I don't see big wars anymore. If you look at the history of warfare, warfare has gone from cataclysmic things like the Civil War or some of the European wars or World War One, World War Two, because they're far too damaging to the economy. What we see are quieter wars that use a lot of economic force. And I think what we're going to be doing is involved in a lot of wars disguised as stability operations. It's a humorous term, but it allows us to get into places like Uganda or Afghanistan and pretend like we're not fighting a war, but actually support proxy forces that are fighting the war. And you saw this in Somalia, where we paid the bill. We basically hired Uganda to go fight the war in Somalia, and nobody knows that we're fighting a war there.
Is that going to backfire on us?
Ultimately, if we stay too long. I mean, we're good at winning wars. We're not good at staying around for the peace.
Well, that is a good point. But you don't see then a major conflict happening?
No, because the mechanism is not there. You have to remember that warfare is typically linked to political stability. So if they were, for example, to impose a draft, let's say we had a large war and we had to go fight China, the political structure is such that as soon as you said, well, we need everybody to sign up and go fight this war, whoever was in power would immediately fall out of grace. So these are the linkages that weren't there before. People actually can vote out a president who starts a war that's unpopular.
We're coming back in a moment with Robert Young Pelton. I've got a split show for you tonight. So for a couple hours, Robert will be with us talking about the world events, how they affect you. Next hour, we'll take some of your phone calls. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. What's happening here? with the U.S. military, with whittling away at our rights. We're going to check in with Robert Young Pelton. In next hour, of course, we'll take phone calls with him here on Coast to Coast. Hey, it's time to thank all of you who are Coast Insiders, by the way. Thank you so much. We've hit another milestone with your Coast Insider Club memberships. It's available to you if you're not a member for 15 cents. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific time, those of you who have that special phone number will be George time. That's right. We're going to open up the phone and allow a little one-on-one conversations. Call early. We're doing it for an hour. I'm going to try to limit the calls to 1 to 2 minutes. So we're going to squeeze in as many as we can, but, you know, they're going to be coming one after the other. So you Coast Insiders, get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie, of course, with our special guest, Robert Young Pelton here. And Robert, let's take a look at what's happening here at home. Could you see any kind of civil unrest or anything like that where the military would step in?
I don't see the military stepping in because they're not supposed to be doing that, so it would be illegal. But what I do see is a constant need to protect the government from people more and more. And I can see that people are going to get more frustrated with the constant involvement of the government in telling them what to do, how to conduct themselves, and also the consistently and probably dramatically increase in taxes. Now, you know, we're supposed to be able to get a tax break, according to President Obama, but Something's got to pay off the deficit. So I think there's going to be a constant anger at the increase in how much money we pay to the government and the reduction in benefits. And I think that'll be capped when we all go asking for our Social Security and all these wonderful benefits we're supposed to have, and we find out there aren't any. So I see a path of resistance, not necessarily clashing.
Well, I agree with you on that. You know, but so many things have happened since 9/11. Like when you mentioned the Patriot Act, how long did it take them, Robert, to put that together? I mean, to me, it was almost as if they had it written before 9/11 happened.
Well, if you read it, it's a very sloppy law. I mean, it has very loose definitions, and it's predicated on the assumption that this is going to be handled by responsible adults against bad people. But it basically removes those very old-fashioned laws that kept the police out of your business, you know, like unlawful search and seizure or surveillance and things like that. And what we didn't know at the time is that those were specifically set up to allow very, very broad monitoring. And, for example, when we said that you can't surveil Americans in this country, we didn't realize that when we're on the Internet or the phone system, much of our traffic goes offshore deliberately, so it could be surveilled all day long without breaking the law. And we didn't think that there'd be a need to entrap people. If you know the case of Eric Haroon, who went over to fight with the Syrian rebels and found himself being arrested as a terrorist just so that the FBI could score, you know, a point. But in actual fact, he didn't do anything illegal. So we see more and more casting of people as bad people, which then all these tools come into play because now they know who you talk to and what websites you go to. So it sets up more bad people, more potential criminals who aren't actually criminals.
I think so, too. What's the latest on the drug war here?
Well, you know, I always tell people, I like to have little facts that always make people think, oh, you're lying or you're kidding. I tell people more people died along the border in Mexico than in Afghanistan last year, and they go, oh, get out of it. And I say, check the facts. Go look at how many murders and how many violent deaths there were because of the drug war, and then go back and check how many people died because of violence in Afghanistan, and people are shocked.
Well, you know, Robert, you know, something's happening. I mean, they're trying to control now border security. I think they even want to lessen the amount of guards we have on the borders, aren't they?
Yeah, and well, what's happening is, you know, we spend a lot of time with sort of paramilitary police and private citizens that live along the border, specifically in Arizona, where there's a lot of traffic. And the one thing that we learn over and over again is it's not about people sneaking across the border. It's about people commuting back and forth with drugs, illegal, you know, people like human trafficking, and doing this on a regular basis. And the numbers are always skewed because it's based on what people are caught. But in reality, they have no idea how many people cross the border every year.
No.
And they have no idea how many people live here illegally. So it's just as easy for Janet Napolitano, who doesn't have her job anymore, to simply go to the border, do a photo op, and say everything looks good. And the actual people around her call me and go, did you hear that pile of crap we just heard out of her mouth? And, you know, they invite us down to say, spend a night on the border with us and see what's happening. And what you see are people with bales of marijuana and hard drugs and coyotes smuggling people across the border, dropping their load, going back and getting more. It's like a freeway.
And it's like a sieve. It's just coming through and they can't stop it, can they?
Yeah, but let's take it up a notch. You know, when I was in Colombia, I was in an area where they were growing the plant that turns into cocaine, and we were talking about corruption and, you know, illegalities, and they looked at me like, this stuff's worth nothing here. In America, look at how much cocaine is worth, and you tell me where the corruption and who's making the money. One of the things that we forget is that it's not just about people sneaking across the border. It's a huge business, and it's been there for a very long time. So a friend of mine called me from a prison in Texas, and he told me how entrenched the Mexican mafia was in the prison system, where they would intimidate people who hire people and say, okay, you're going to hire this guy to work in the kitchen. You're going to hire this guy, you know, to do the cleaning. Please. And he'd say, no, just send a resume. He said, here's the house where you live. And he quit his job because he didn't want to get killed. But that drug, that smuggling doesn't stop at the border. It goes all the way into our police, our prison system, and also the border system.
That is big money too, Robert, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
How much of this is the CIA involved with?
CIA does have surveillance and a drone program along the border, along with the Air Force and other groups to monitor the potential, you know, influx of terrorists and what's going to cause. The CIA has a huge anti-drug program that stretches all the way around the world from Burma to Afghanistan. I don't think they're involved in anything negative. I think they're just trying to stem the flow, because with drugs also comes crime, weapons, you know, terrorism, things like that.
Robert, the way that this has been coming down on people and the speed as it has been coming down is what to me seems to be the most frightening thing of all of this, whether it's controlling the border, drug control, you name it. It seems to be happening faster and faster and faster. It's almost like they feel like they're out of time and they have to do it now. Are you feeling that?
Well, I look at the other side of the coin. I think we're getting dumber and dumber. I think we look at the wrong thing. So there's a bright, shiny object called the war in Afghanistan, and we don't pay attention to the war.
We don't even look at it anymore.
So people can fool us, and obviously politicians look at the polls. So if we don't know that something exists, we don't get angry when they ignore it. So whether it's the quality of education your kids have or whether it's how much you pay in taxes and how much little you get back, those aren't hot-button items because all those investigative journalists don't have jobs anymore. So we're getting dumber and dumber in that there are less and less people who point out things that need to be told. So we're relying on whistleblowers. But, you know, how do you read 250,000 cables between State Department officials and try to figure out what's going on? So there's so much information that we tend to just ignore it, and we say, oh, look, there's a reality show about a guy looking for fish, you know?
Yeah.
So we're dumbing down to deal with this overload of information.
How hot will this be for the 2016 election, which is going to come up faster than we can imagine?
Oh, God. Well, yeah. But once again, you know, the political parties are very good at saying, which flavor of ice cream do you want, vanilla or vanilla? They're going to let us choose between two of the same candidate. And then what they're going to do is they're going to pick hot-button items that have nothing to do with the quality of life. And we're going to argue endlessly over things that have really no ultimate effect on the quality of our life. So the political system is you basically write a check, you come up with enough money to buy the presidency, and you race two horses against each other. But you're going to get a horse as a winner.
We know that's going to happen unless they both fall before the finish line, right? But
well,
what are the odds
like
of that happening?
I'd like to see some reinvention. I mean, I'm not a political animal. You know, I know warfare. I don't really follow politics. So most of the people I know vote with a gun. So the idea here is that we need to reinvent the political system. There needs to be a third party or a fourth or a fifth party. We need to break the stranglehold of the two-party system, or else we're just never going to progress.
No, I agree with you there. What is going on with these private firms that have been hired, you know, the Blackwaters, those kind of companies? What's going on there?
Well, you know, we talk about how we can't get upset about something if we don't know it's not happening. You know, it's like a triple negative. And what the U.S. military and the intelligence service, as you see with Snowden, does, is outsource. Something like 70% of intelligence gathering is done through freelancers and outside companies. When we fight wars now, we outsource war. So the new phrase is stability operations. They don't call themselves mercenaries. What they're doing is they're stabilizing countries. And what we will do is, for example, you remember those little flare-up in Mali and North Africa?
Yeah.
We will hire contractors who are all ex-military, ex-SEALs, ex-special forces.
Retired people?
Yeah, retired, but they're young. I mean, you know, they come out very young, and they have the same skill sets, except they make twice as much money. We'll write a contract to a big nameless company like Academy or General Dynamics. They will send these people as consultants. They will go in and they will train up the local military, and then we will provide weapons surreptitiously through a second country, and we will go fight a war.
Sounds like Vietnam all over again.
Well, that's how it started. You know, in the very beginning, they ran the war like a corporation, and until we had to have the draft and we knew our neighbors were getting killed, we didn't even really think that we would have a war in Southeast Asia. So what we're doing now is they're skipping over the fake WMDs, and they're skipping over all the, you know, be afraid, be afraid. They're just simply going in there, fighting these obscure wars, paying for it with a check, and then if somebody gets caught or something blows up, they go, well, we don't know what happened. It's much like Nicaragua. Most people didn't know that we fought a very dirty and ugly war in Nicaragua because we used Contras and advisors and contractors.
How long have we been doing this stuff?
Let's see. So if you can go back, America actually hired contractors during the Revolutionary War. You know, we hired people to train, like Kosciuszko was hired to train our troops. We had Lafayette, who was a kind of an effete French kid, come over and try to support us. So we've used outside skills because we learned it from Europe. You know, Europe was the one that had all the limp-wristed politicians that couldn't fight wars, and they would hire Hessians and groups of men that just did nothing but fight. So we've always done it, but then what happened is during World War II, we kind of built up a big enough infrastructure that we didn't really rely on contractors until Vietnam. And it was actually Dick Cheney that came up with the idea of copying what the oil industry does. The oil industry doesn't really own anything. They hire everything out. They set up an oil rig, they drill, they pull it down, they ship it back. So Cheney came up with the idea of hiring companies to run the infrastructure, you know, the toilets, the cooking. And then what happened is that they became such an easy way to fight a war.
He did the same thing.
Yeah, that it expanded to such a point that there are actually more contractors working in CIA stations and doing special operations than there were actual military.
Are they dressed up in military garb?
Some are, some aren't. For example, when I was doing missions with the Special Forces team in December, an ODA, which is the core group, is 12 men. But they were supported by something like 24, 25 contractors. And that was in the area of, you know, bomb disposal, interpreting, you know, camp facilities.
And these are good fighting people, aren't they?
Yeah, these are men who used to be in the military. They retire. They come right back.
Are they the best of the best?
You know, I don't want to judge them because, you know, it's a wide spectrum, but If I was in the Army and I was, let's say, 35, and I was getting kind of beat up and I wanted to get out, I would take my money and I'd go back in and I would sell my services and go over, let's say, 3 to 6 months at a time and make $250,000. So all the friends that I know that were in Special Forces are all making extraordinary salaries, doing all kinds of esoteric things, but it's a job. It's not something where you get deployed for a year and you're on your fifth divorce. They can actually go back and forth every 6 months.
How many of these Special Force members get killed and we don't hear about it?
Ah, good question. Well, you remember Benghazi?
Yeah.
We had two, we thought they were Navy SEALs, and then we found out they were ex-Navy SEALs working for a company called MVM, which had a contract to protect the CIA. And we were very upset, and we didn't find out that one of them didn't even have life insurance. So he probably had DBA Act, but, you know, these people are private citizens. They look like soldiers, you know, they have all the gear and everything, but they're actually over there working as contractors. And we're kind of shocked. We're saying, well, where's all the people that we train and pay all the money for? And it's like, no, we use contractors.
Do they have families here?
Of course. They're actually, one of the guys that was killed was my employee's next-door neighbor. They're just regular people, but they're making an extraordinary amount of money.
Do people know what they do?
No, they work under extreme secrecy. And they, you know, it's kind of like the Knuckle Bump Club. They all hold top secret clearances. They all get jobs through the Old Boy Network. You know, the resumes are on file. And if you're Tier 1, which means that you were part of an elite group in the SEALs or Special Forces, you can pretty much work anywhere you want and make around $1,200 a day if you're working for the agency.
Could these companies hire these people to, let's say, create terrorism, shoot up kids in a school, or do whatever they needed to do for their own little purpose?
No, because the contracts they work under are so onerous that they don't do that. But what you're talking about is a different branch, and that is when you work for the agency, you know, you don't do anything wrong because you're a U.S. citizen and you work for a government agency.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you're asked to do things that require secondhand sources to do things, and that's when we get into the dirty tricks and off-the-book stuff, you know, the black operations, they call them.
And they're done, aren't they?
Well, they're done. They're called false flag operations. There's also, you know, black letters where they create disinformation and insert it into the enemy's mindset. There are a number of things that are done because they have to be done, like the Yellow Cake Niger letter, you know, was a forgery done by an ex-CIA officer who thought that would be pretty tricky and provide the information. And then when I think it was Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame, his wife, exposed that for fraud, Dick Cheney had them outed. So, yeah, there's all kinds of dirty tricks going on.
And these tricks, this is what fascinates me, Robert. I mean, at what limit would they go to?
Well, they're supposed to only involve foreign nationals. They're only supposed to involve people that we're technically at war with. And you wouldn't know who we're at war with because that's secret. And they involve sort of quiet verbal conversations with people who can be trusted, who are given cash, that if they get caught, we say, I don't know what he was doing.
That's right. Deny everything. Would they do those things here?
No. And you know, I was just reading about the Kennedy assassination and all these things and, you know, the Watergate burglary, so I'm probably absolutely dead wrong.
That's right. I would challenge that. I think they would do that here.
Yeah, I'd like to think that I'm somewhat naive and I don't want to think about it, but what I've seen overseas would verify that if they do that over there and they have no problem doing it, I'm sure they do it over here. So.
And if they did do it here, what would the agenda be?
Well, I think the agenda is if someone is going to expose something that they think is very important, and you remember the whole WMD thing, they tried very hard to keep that solid and not reveal information on that. If a nation wants to go to war, in other words, the nation being the president, but there's no evidence or support for it, I can see a lot of people being hired to provide evidence. I can see journalists being harassed by the courts. You know, people like Jim Risen is a journalist that works for the New York Times, and he has to testify in court, you know, who told him what. There was a CIA agent thrown in jail for 2.5 years on a plea bargain for just confirming that the agency uses torture. So we tend to use the courts these days almost like a hammer. So if you want to stick your head up and say, hey, I saw this, I'm a witness, you're going to end up in court and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees and end up in jail.
Robert, we're coming back to take questions with you next on Coast to Coast AM.